to the Divided Kingdom. This is Elizabeth Cuppett Caverly. Lou Caverly and I are bringing you this Christian Cutting Edge program of news. We've been bringing this to you for over a decade, and tonight, August 16th, 2018, we have two very big breaking stories. First of all, we have the situation near Parliament in the UK. Lou, let's find out the latest.
From the Washington Times, Wednesday, August 15th, 2018. Police treat crash outside Parliament as terrorism. Jill Lawless and Danica Kirker, London. Police flooded central London streets and cordoned off the city's government district Tuesday after a speeding car plotted a cyclist and crashed outside Parliament and what authorities were treating as an act of terrorism. With the driver in custody, counter-terror detectives were working to uncover the motive behind what they suspect is the fourth vehicle attack in Britain and the second in Parliament in 18 months. A rooftop camera recorded a silver Ford Fiesta driving past Parliament before 7:30 a.m. Tuesday before suddenly veering sharply to the left, striking cyclists waiting at a set of lights before crossing the road and crashing into a barrier. Armed police surrounded the car within seconds, pulling a man from the vehicle. Police said the driver was alone and no weapons were found in the car. Three people were hurt, none critically. Police arrested the 29-year-old driver, a resident of England's Midlands region, who was not previously known to the intelligence services. And I'll insert Fox News reported that he was a British citizen from the Sudan. Britain's top counterterrorism officer, Assistant Commissioner Neil Basu, told reporters the suspect was not cooperating with police. Other authorities said the car used in the attack was driven from Birmingham in central England to London late Monday and was in central London for more than 7 hours before the crash. Detectives were searching two properties in Birmingham and one in another Midland city, Nottingham. Fox News, by the way, also said that Nottingham has links to some of the past terrorism in England. One injured person was treated at the scene of Tuesday's attack, and two were taken to local hospitals where they were treated and released. Donovan Parsons, a cameraman for ITV's Good Morning Britain, was filming nearby when he heard a loud crash. Quote, "I saw the car crashed into the barrier outside Westminster Palace, with smoke coming out of the vehicle. Police were around it, telling people to get back. They dragged someone out of the car," unquote. The early morning scenes brought a sickly sense of deja vu to many Londoners, whose city has been a target of violent attacks over the decades, from Irish militants, Islamic jihadists, and far-right extremists. In March 2017, Khalid Massoud plowed a car into crowds on Westminster Bridge, killing four people, then fatally stabbed a police officer before being shot dead in a courtyard outside Parliament. Less than 3 months later, a van rammed into pedestrians on London Bridge before three men abandoned the vehicle and attacked weekend revelers in the nearby Borough Market. Eight people were killed and 48 injured. In June 2017, a far-right extremist drove a van into a crowd of worshippers, leaving a London mosque, killing one and injuring eight. That attack followed the suicide bombing a month earlier at an Ariana Grande concert in Manchester that killed 22 people. British authorities say the threat is not diminishing. Since March 2017, they have foiled 13 Islamist-inspired plots and four far-right plots, and currently have 776 live counterterrorism investigations, officials said Tuesday. Tuesday's crash raised questions about security at Parliament, which has grown progressively tighter after previous attacks. London Mayor Sadiq Khan said authorities would learn the lessons from the latest incident. Quote, "Just as the terrorists, the bad guys, evolve and find new ways to kill, to injure, to maim, to divide our communities, the police, the security services, the emergency services evolve and find ways to keep us safe," he said. And this is Lou speaking. Do you listeners recall that former mayor of London, Boris Johnson, apparently didn't, quote, evolve enough to keep the UK borders open. So he resigned his new post as head of border control. Who can believe his successor, Sadiq Khan? And if you listeners want the real truth about the Islamic takeover in the UK, you can buy for very little money a DVD set Elizabeth and I purchased in the spring. It's called Europe's Last Stand. We've just begun to view it, and it seems hard-hitting and excellent. Best of all, it's now on sale at a very low price. ChristianBook.com is selling part one for $5 and part two for that same amount plus shipping. The title, again, is Europe's Last Stand, part one and part two. If you have a pen or pencil, here's the phone number of ChristianBook.com. That's 1-800-247-4784. Once again, the phone number for ChristianBook.com is 1-800-247-4784. And the name of the DVD set is Europe's Last Stand.
Thank you, Lou. And, of course, across the pond, shall we say, over there in Hungary, we do have Viktor Orban saying no submission to Islam, and he outlines explicitly conservative goals for Hungary. And again, this article is by Daniel Pipes in the Washington Times commentary section for Tuesday, August 14th. So we're going to quote a little bit from that article, and Pipes says that Muslim tourists visit Hungary in substantial numbers, as a stroll along the Danube River in Budapest quickly makes evident. Longer visas are also available. For 4 years, 2013 to 17, the Fidesz government offered settlement bonds for sale for about 350,000 euros, or about $398,840, in return for which anyone, including many Muslims, received Hungarian passports. A scholarship program called Stipendium Hungaricum has welcomed some 20,000 students, especially Muslims from Turkey, Lebanon, and the Emirates, and Indonesia. Muslim immigrants have visible roles in varied economic activities, medicine, engineering, real estate, money changing, restaurants, and bakeries. A Turkish artist, Can Togay, conceived Budapest's haunting Holocaust memorial, Shoes on the Danube Bank. In an October 2016 referendum, 98.4% of Hungarians voted against accepting migrants allotted to their country by the European Union. Admittedly, a government campaign for a no vote, along with an opposition boycott, artificially inflated this number, but it does point to a majority rejecting unvetted migrants. As one prominent Orban ally told me, "We like Muslims, but over there, not here." In discussions in Budapest focused on why Hungarians and their neighbors respond so negatively to uncontrolled migration, multiple factors came up, and Lou, here's what they were. Negative memories of Ottoman aggression and the occupation of Hungarian territories lasting over 150 years. Can we imagine that, listeners? You know, our little republic here of America isn't an awful lot longer than that kind of enslavement, really. The occupation of the Hungarian territories lasting over 150 years. Next point, insecurity about sovereignty, having regained it from the Soviet Union only 29 years ago. And I remember of working in a department store many years ago in Pittsburgh with a young man named Harry, and he had fled during that Hungarian Revolution. So I know that this is still in the memories of the older people there in Hungary. They want to keep their sovereignty. Next point, ideology from Brussels is as little attractive as it was from Moscow. David Szabo of the Zazadveg, I'm not sure I've gotten that one, Foundation told me, explaining why Hungarians turn toward a traditional Christian-oriented culture. Next point, a awareness of problems associated with Muslim migration to Western Europe, including polygamy, honor killings, rape gangs, partial no-go zones, Sharia courts, and parallel societies. Elizabeth Caverly is just thinking that parallel societies, that sounds like a euphemism or a soft way to call the other term, the no-go zones, you see, parallel societies. And again, we interject that this is the purpose of Dawah, the deception, to look like we're assimilating, but many of them do not want to assimilate. They want to conquer. We remember that the meaning of Islam, I believe, is submission. You see, if the infidel doesn't submit, the infidel is wiped out. But back to these points in the column by Daniel Pipes in the Washington Times for Tuesday, August 14th, these points that the Hungarians are considering when they think about having unlimited migration of the Muslims. Next point, lack of a Western European confidence inspired by American attitudes that any migrant can be assimilated. Preference for population decline due to low birth rates and high emigration over bringing in people from an alien civilization. As one Hungarian told me, better empty villages than Somali villages. Next point, optimism that Hungary's population, which is declining by about 30,000 persons a year, can be boosted without Muslim migration through pro-natalist policies, granting citizenship to ethnic Hungarians living outside of Hungary and attracting European Union immigrants. Although Orbán governs a small country, the movement he represents is of global importance, notes Bulgarian analyst Ivan Krastev. A survey of countries may rank its power just number 73 out of 80, but Hungary is gaining an unprecedented centrality in Europe, with Mr. Orbán becoming the continent's most important leader. And then we see another leader on the decline, and this was in Wes Pruden's column, The Unlikely Political Feats of Late Summer, again, Tuesday, August 14th, The Washington Times. He talked first about what happened, because we have to know that there can be good Samaritans among the Muslims. Not all Muslim people are bad. We're not going to stereotype them that way. But he says an Islamic mob of 300 shouting and waving their weapons attacked a village in Nigeria the other day, terrorizing several farmers and their families, all Christians, and looting and burning their houses. The Christians fled, seeking refuge among their Muslim neighbors. Ordinarily, this would have been a perfect example of leaping from a frying pan into the fire, but not this time. An imam took charge, leading 262 men, women, and children to his house and then to his mosque. The gunman demanded that the imam turn the Christians over to them and said they would burn down the mosque if he didn't, but he didn't. As the BBC reported the story, and the gunman left, destroying two churches on their way out of town. The Good Samaritan has many faces, National Review observes, and quote, one of them is the good imam. But not all stories about Good Samaritans turn out so happily. Chancellor Angela Merkel, who tried to open up all of Europe with her example as the extravagant Samaritan to the tired and the poor of Africa and the Middle East, yearning to breathe free, is in a heap of trouble for her excess. Now, when we look at this whole situation of what's going on with our foreign policy, we're somewhat worried that the swamp is reasserting its tentacles. We have talked on this program before that it might look good here, the U.S. economy growing to 3.1%. This news came out in the Washington Times Tuesday, August 14th. Oh, hip, hip, hooray. We're all going to be rich, aren't we? We're all going to have jobs. It's all going to be so wonderful. But at the same time, we have all these people in the United States, both in rural areas and in urban enclaves, lost to the opioid crisis. This is just tearing families apart. People are committing suicide. And yes, there is a maker in the U.S., I believe, that we had a program earlier to talk about this drug company, It plays a large role, but the larger role is what Pat Tillman wanted to come back to report to the U.S. on, those opium fields being guarded by our U.S. troops, and this plan to keep the drugs rolling and the huge conglomerate, which would be the top order of the New World Order. These royal families, these people who are involved in this, these obscene profits through the centuries. This opium business goes way back, even to the period of the Regency in England. If we don't do something as a Christian nation to stop this, this lasting economy growth won't last, not long. Judgment is still coming. And so we quoted to you that we had heard a program on InfoWars with Doug Hagman, I think, of the Northeast Intelligence Group, and his friend Paul L. Williams, the author of that wonderful book, Crescent Moon Rising. And Doug Hagman's research showed that we were artificially creating dissension in Afghanistan so that we could keep our troops there, so that we could keep growing the opium. So what do we have here in the Washington Times, August 14th, 2018? We have the headline, Taliban look to solidify, expand war gains after surprise attack. The Taliban are on the verge of dramatically expanding their control over southern and eastern Afghanistan in a surprise offensive that has caught Afghan and American forces off guard and thrown a vexing wrench into the Trump administration's strategy for ending the nearly 17-year-old war. The Afghan Defense Ministry said Monday that a Taliban assault on the city of Ghazni, a key provincial capital linking other areas under the Islamic militant group's control just 75 miles southeast of Kabul, has killed roughly 100 Afghan security forces and some 20 civilians over 3 days. While the Afghan forces, backed by U.S. and NATO advisors, claimed Monday night to have retained control of central Ghazni, local reports indicated the Taliban fighters still held pockets of the city and had simultaneously swept in and taken over most of the surrounding province's rural areas. This is really laughable. We think about all those apocryphal stories of going in out after bin Laden into those caves, and if the key military might of the world, the U.S., couldn't take out this group. It isn't logical. Of course it isn't. Do you see that we are being snookered again? We are being led so that we can send our poor youth into harm's way, into the meat grinder, because I think it was Henry Kissinger who said they were just dumb farm animals to be ground up. And yes, we liked July 4th. We liked watching the celebration at the Capitol, all of the celebration of our country's independence. But we saw that long tribute to these poor soldiers who might be missing a leg. They might be missing half their brain. War is a racket. That's what General Smedley Butler said. If you have any good sense, if you really know the Lord Jesus Christ, you will not let your child or your grandchild enlist in these forces. As long as we have this kind of swamp thing going on, and it might go on centuries more, but God wants you to be wise to protect your family. And then we had the other little kind of an accusation that, once again, it wasn't just Hillary and Obama who helped build up Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Why, we have something going on perhaps again. But the Pentagon says, oh, no, no, no.
From the Washington Times, August 8th, 2018. Pentagon denies reports of U.S. allies bribing, recruiting Al-Qaeda fighters in Yemen. By Carlos Munoz. Pentagon officials are adamantly denying reports that U.S.-supported allies have bribed and at times recruited members of al-Qaeda's Yemeni cell to support their ongoing campaign against Iranian-backed Shia parliamentaries in the country, said Pentagon spokesman Colonel Robert Manning. This is false, patently false. And he said that regarding the claims first reported by the Associated Press that members of the Saudi and Emirati-led Arab coalition battling Houthi rebels in Yemen have co-opted al-Qaeda members into the fight. He went on to say, quote, "We do not pay al-Qaeda. We kill al-Qaeda." He told that to reporters at the Pentagon this week, declining to comment further. His comments come amid signs the Arab coalition's campaign to retake the key Yemeni port city of Hodeidah from the Tehran proxy forces has stalled. Houthi militias have received direct support from Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, IRGC, and I guess it's pronounced QUDS force. The IRGC's directorate responsible for advising Shia paramilitary forces in Yemen.
I'm not certain, Lou. I think perhaps I've heard that word pronounced Quds, but I'm not sure.
That's very possible. And again, that's the director responsible for advising Shia paramilitary forces in Yemen, Syria, Iraq, and elsewhere across the globe. Quote, "It is Iran who is supporting the Houthis, who are launching extended-range missiles against major population centers in Saudi Arabia, and who are blocking the proper distribution of humanitarian aid and critical medicines to address one of the largest outbreaks of cholera on record in the world." And that quote is by U.S. Central Command General Joseph Votel. He told reporters last month. But coalition commanders in Riyadh and Abu Dhabi seem to have taken a page out of Iran's playbook by attempting to buy off or recruit members of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, the Yemeni cell of the Sunni fundamentalist group. Saudi Arabia remains the main pillar of Sunni power in the Middle East and has repeatedly taken military, political, and economic actions to curb the influence of its main Shia regional rivals in Iran. Over the past 2 years, Arab coalition commanders have funneled hundreds of thousands of dollars to AQAP commanders to abandon their strongholds in southern eastern Yemen, the AP reported. In other cases, al-Qaeda fighters were allowed to leave their territories in the country with their weapons and supply caches intact. In other instances, battle-hardened AQAP fighters were actually folded into the rank of the Arab coalition and sent to fight Houthi forces, AP reported. And that, by the way, AQAP is short for al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. Regional analysts claim American military and diplomatic officials were aware of the sideline deals caught between AQAP and the Arab coalition, which forced Washington into an increasingly delicate position in Yemen. The Trump White House is vowing to ramp up pressure on the Iranian regime, as well as its proxy forces across the globe, beginning with the administration's decision to withdraw from the landmark nuclear deal with Tehran earlier this year. But the thrust of the Pentagon's main mission in Yemen remains counterterrorism operations to eliminate al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which U.S. officials say remains one of the most dangerous and best-funded al-Qaeda cells in the world.
So you see, is there some hypocrisy? Are we being tricked? Are we being told that we're doing something when we're really doing something else by stealth? It's important that this program tries to bring you the truth that's underneath the so-called truth. And if you appreciate this program, you can tell others to go to our website, thedividedkingdom.org. There's a little problem in it in the archives, and that has been fixed. So go to thedividedkingdom.org. A very recent important program was on transhumanism and artificial intelligence. So we do hope that you alert your neighbors, your friends, your pastors, if they are at all willing to become awake and do something. But if they've been snookered into the pre-tribulation rapture belief, they say, why does it bother me? Why, I won't be here. I don't have to do anything. That certainly isn't scriptural. So we can just say that at this corner, we certainly do not believe in the pre-tribulation rapture. No, there are going to be some Christians who are going to wake up to some persecution one of these days, and it's not going to be easy or too pleasant for them. But now we're just looking at this this pull back and forth between the acceptance of all of these Muslim immigrants and some people who are waking up some other countries. The BBC reported in June on Austria that they were going to shut 7 political mosques and expel imams. Austria has said it will close down 7 mosques and expel imams who it says are funded by foreign countries. Chancellor Sebastian Kurz said the move was a crackdown on political Islam. Some mosques are suspected of having links to Turkish nationalists. In April, images emerged showing children in Turkish army uniforms reenacting World War I's Battle of Gallipoli. The Turkish President's Office called Austria's move Islamophobic, racist, and discriminatory. Austria to cut benefits for immigrants. Austrian far-right triumph inspires nationalists, Europe, and the veil. Presidential spokesman Ibrahim Kalin took to Twitter to condemn the move. Austria's decision to close 7 mosques and expel imams is a reflection of the Islamophobic, racist, and discriminatory wave in this country. Now, this is from Ibrahim Kalin. It is an attempt to target Muslim communities for the sake of scoring cheap political points. And so Chancellor Kurz said, parallel societies, political Islam, and radicalization tendencies have no place in our country. What prompted the crackdown? The Gallipoli reenactment performance took place in a mosque reported to be run by Turkish ultra-nationalist Grey Wolves Group in Vienna Favoriten District. The group has branches in several countries. Austrian media report that the child actors played dead and were covered with Turkish flags. Austrian public broadcaster ORF, ORF says photos of children doing the Grey Wolves greeting also came from that mosque. The government is dissolving an organization called the Arab Religious Community. 6 of the mosques targeted for closure are run by it, 3 in Vienna, 2 in Upper Austria, and 1 in Carinthia. In neighboring Germany, police have been probing links between certain imams and the Turkish state, which funds a Muslim organization called DITIB. The Austrian authorities have been working with a Muslim community body called IGDO to identify mosques and imams suspected of radical Islamist or nationalist connections. How bad are Austria-Turkey relations? They have soured significantly in recent years. Mr. Kurz's election campaign last year drew heavily on anxiety about immigration and the integration of Muslims. His Conservative People's Party, OVP, formed a coalition government with the far-right Freedom Party, FPO. Mr. Kurz wants the EU, to break off Turkey's EU membership negotiations, a stance that has angered Turkish President Erdogan. In May 2017, that anger led Turkey to veto NATO's cooperation with Austria. The move disrupted NATO's partnership activities with 41 countries. Turkey is a key player in NATO operations. President Erdogan's ruling AK party has roots in political Islam and espouses traditional Muslim values. He is campaigning for re-election, and both Austria and Germany are wary of his political influence in their Turkish communities. The governments in Austria and other Central European countries, Hungary, Slovakia, the Czech Republic, and Poland, want to restrict Muslim integration to Europe. There is friction between them and Germany, which took in about 1 million mainly Muslim asylum seekers in 2015. Turkey is housing more than 3 million Syrian refugees and says the EU is not doing enough to help. And Lou, I think at this time, give me the little card where I can give the phone number again to the people who might want to order the DVD set, Europe's Last Stand. It's very, very important that you alert your friends and neighbors. If you don't think that preliminary steps are underway here in America to sell us out. You are naive. You really want to see these DVDs, Europe's Last Stand, Parts 1 and 2. And so you can go to the phone number for christianbook.com, or you can go online, 1-800-247-4784. And again, the phone number is 1-800-247-4784. How much is going on here? We've talked before in this program about all the mosques coming, and now there's another little development. I'm sure you've been hearing some glimmers of this. What is going on? Lou, on an earlier program, brought a lot of information to you about the infiltration into the public school systems of the Muslim agenda. Someone at Oxon Hill noticed that his student child was being warped in this manner. Someone else, I believe, in West Virginia. Isn't that right, Lou? I believe that's where there was a gentleman who had a daughter who was about a fifth grader, and suddenly he realized she was having to recite this affirmation that being a Muslim, you know, is good, that Muslims would do. But she did not have to recite John 3:16. Of course, when they did this little social studies unit on Christianity, it was minimal. Well, what has been going on, Lou?
From Fox News, August 8, 2018, man at compound accused of training kids for school attacks. The Associated Press, Taos, New Mexico. A father arrested at a ramshackle New Mexico compound, where 11 hungry children were found living in filth, was training youngsters to commit school shootings, prosecutors said in court documents obtained Wednesday.
What? Did you catch that? I hope you did. Training for school shootings. Now, these school shootings would not be in Nigeria. They would not be in Hungary. They would not be in the UK. Where would they be, Lou?
In the good old USA. The article goes on to say the allegations against Siraj, even Bahaj, came to light as authorities awaited word on whether human remains discovered at the site were those of his missing son, who was severely disabled and went missing in December in Jonesboro, Georgia, near Atlanta. The documents say Bahaj was conducting weapons training with assault rifles at the compound on the outskirts of Amelia, a tiny town near the Colorado border in New Mexico, marked by scattered homes and sagebrush. Prosecutor Timothy Hassan wrote in the court documents Wednesday, quote, he poses a greater danger or a great danger to the children found on the property, as well as a threat to the community as a whole, due to the presence of firearms and his intent to use these firearms in a violent and illegal manner, unquote. Authorities raided the compound Friday in an investigation that has yielded a series of startling revelations, including the discovery of the children, 11 children in rags, and word that Wahaj wanted to perform an exorcism on his son because he thought the boy was possessed by the devil. Prosecutor Timothy Hassan filed the court documents while asking that Wahaj be held without bail after he was arrested last week with four other adults at the compound, facing child abuse charges. Prosecutors did not bring up the school shooting accusation during initial court hearings Wednesday for the abuse suspects. A judge ordered them all held without bond pending further proceedings. In the court documents, authorities said a foster parent of one of the children removed from the compound had told authorities the child had been trained to use an assault rifle in preparation for a school shooting. Taos County Sheriff Jerry O'Greff previously said adults at the compound were, quote, considered extremists of the Muslim belief, unquote. He did not elaborate, saying it was part of the investigation. Alex Kostich of the Taos County Public Defender's Office questioned the accusation of school shooting conspiracy, saying the claim was presented with little information beyond the explanation that it came from a foster parent. Kostich believes prosecutors are not certain about the credibility of the foster parent, whom he has no way of reaching to verify the claim, he said. The human remains were being analyzed by medical examiners to determine if they are those of Abdul Ghani Wahaj, the missing boy. Earlier this year, his grandfather, Imam Siraj Wahaj, posted a plea on Facebook for help finding his grandson. The elder Wahaj heads the Masjid al-Taqwa in Brooklyn, a mosque that has attracted radical speakers over the years. He met Mahmoud Abu Halima when he came to the site to raise money for Muslims in Afghanistan. Abu Halima later helped bomb the World Trade Center in 1993. In a Georgia arrest warrant, authorities said 39-year-old Siraj Ibn Wahaj had told his son's mother that he wanted to perform an exorcism on the child. He later said he was taking the child to a park and didn't return. He is accused in Georgia of kidnapping the boy. The arrest warrant issued there says the missing boy has a condition caused by a lack of oxygen and blood flow around the time of birth. He cannot walk and requires constant attention, his mother told police. For months, neighbors worried about the squalid compound built along the remote New Mexican plain, saying they took their concerns to authorities long before sheriff's officials raided the facility, described as a small camping trailer in the ground. The search of the compound came amid a two-month investigation that included the FBI. O'Griff said federal agents surveilled the area a few weeks ago but did not find probable cause to search the property. That changed when Georgia detectives forwarded a message to the sheriff that he said initially had been sent to a third party, saying, quote, "We are starving and need food and water," unquote. Authorities found that what O'Grief called, quote, "the saddest living conditions and poverty," unquote, he has seen in 30 years in law enforcement. He said Wahaj was armed with multiple firearms, including an assault rifle, but he was taken into custody without incident. The group arrived in Amelia in December with enough money to buy groceries and construction supplies, according to Tyler Anderson, a 41-year-old auto mechanic who lives nearby. He said he helped them install solar panels after they arrived, but eventually stopped visiting. Anderson said he met both of the men in the group, but never the women, who authorities have said are the mothers of the 11 children ages 1 to 15. Anderson said, quote, "We just figured they were doing what we were doing, getting a piece of land and getting off the grid," unquote. As the months passed, he said he stopped seeing the smaller children playing in the area and didn't hear guns being fired at a shooting range on the property. Jason Badger, who owned the property where the compound was built, said he and his wife had pressed authorities to remove the group after becoming concerned about the children. The group had built the compound on that acreage instead of a neighboring tract owned by Lucas Morton, one of the men arrested during the raid. However, a judge dismissed an eviction notice filed by Badger against Morton in June, court records said. The records did not provide further details on the judge's decision. After the raid, Anderson looked over the property for the first time in months. He said, quote, "I was flabbergasted from what it had turned into from the last time I saw it," unquote. And we have a little update from the Washington Times, dated Tuesday, August 14th, 2018. Evidence of child abuse at compound under review, Taos, New Mexico. A court hearing was planned on allegations that children at a remote compound in northern New Mexico may have been trained in the use of firearms in preparation for a school shooting. Two men and three women were scheduled to appear in New Mexico State District Court Monday on accusations of child abuse. They were arrested and 11 children were detained during an August 4th raid on a squalid makeshift living compound near the Colorado state line. Public defenders are calling into question the credibility of information that links defendant Siraj Ibn Wahaj to firearms training for children. Mr. Wahaj is accused of abducting his son from Georgia in December. The body of a small boy was retrieved from the compound a week ago.
It's very important that you pray to God. You know, you listeners have a lot of power under Jesus Christ. Ask Jesus Christ to send a spirit of repentance on this nation and ask him to cast out this jihadi spirit that wants to come in here. This program can be heard on WWCR, Worldwide Shortwave, on 4.840 megahertz, Thursday evenings, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 4840. And if you tune in, you may hear us on Saturday mornings on 7.490 at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. It's really important that you spread the word. These mosques are coming. They're in Tennessee, where WWCR is. We know that there are people there who have children who are very concerned. What will it be like a generation from now? We're on this radio because we know that God has called us to do it, and He's helping us financially. And we thank all of you listeners who gave us money sacrificially this summer. We can never thank you enough, and we are praying for you that God will help your life circumstances. Please keep your trust in Him and do not give up praying for President Trump and his administration, praying that we get out of Afghanistan, that we stop the opium cultivation. Now, here is a very important chart, and if some of you want to write to this place and try to get one, it's from Liberty Council, C-O-U-N-S-E-L, Action, Liberty Council Action, at P.O. Box 540629. Again, that's P.O. Box 540629, Orlando, Florida. And the zip is 32854-0629. Again, the zip is 32854-0629. Now, Lou and I were horrified when we saw this. Islamic Terrorist Network in America. Did you hear what I said? I didn't say in Hungary. I didn't say in Germany or Sweden where the rape gangs are. I said Islamic Terrorist Network in America. I'm just going to read them off to you right now. Seattle, Washington has two. Hybrid Fundamentalist Group, Algerian Armed Islamic Group. Portland, Oregon has one. Al-Qaeda. San Francisco has Islamic Liberation Party and Abu Sayyaf. California has, again, Santa Clara, and in that place it has Al-Qaeda and Hamas. L.A. has Hamas and Al-Gamat al-Islamiyya and Algerian Armed Islamic Group. San Diego has American Islamic Group, Algerian Armed Islamic Group. We move now to Tucson, Arizona, Al-Qaeda and Hamas. We move to Colorado. Denver has Al-Qaeda. We move to Oklahoma. Tulsa has Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas. Oklahoma City has Hamas groups and conventions. Texas, Arlington, Texas has Al-Qaeda. Dallas and Fort Worth have Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and Hezbollah. Houston has Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and Muslim Brotherhood. Then we move to Michigan. Detroit has Al-Gamat al-Islamiyya, Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Muslim Brotherhood. Chicago, Illinois has Hamas, Islamic Jihad. Kansas City, Missouri has Hamas. Tulsa, Oklahoma had Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas. Oklahoma City, again, had Hamas, we said, groups and conventions. We now move to Missouri, Columbia, Missouri, Algerian Islamic Salvation Front. I'm not sure where those are two. I believe that's all one word. Algerian Islamic Salvation Front, Al-Qaeda, and Hamas. Then we come a little bit farther. Oh, I guess we forgot Plainfield, Indiana. Indiana, oh, in the heartland, ISNA, I-S-N-A, Muslim Brotherhood. New York has Al-Gamaat, Al-Islamiyya, Al-Muhajirun, Hezbollah, Jamaat, Islami, Al-Fukra, and Hamas. Cleveland, Ohio has Islamic Jihad, Muslim Brotherhood. Boston, Massachusetts has Al-Qaeda, National Islamic Front. Laurel, Maryland has Al-Qaeda. Potomac, Maryland has Hezbollah. D.C. has Hamas, Hezbollah. Right there with the seat of Congress. You see that? Hamas and Hezbollah, right there. Herndon, Virginia has Al-Qaeda and Islamic Jihad. Springfield, Virginia has Hamas. Raleigh, North Carolina has Islamic Jihad. Roanoke, Virginia has Al-Fukra. Charlotte, North Carolina has Hezbollah. Orlando, Florida has Al-Qaeda. Tampa has Islamic Jihad. Fort Lauderdale and Boca Raton, Al-Qaeda. This is really important, isn't it? Now, the second breaking story of today is the Washington Times. The children are being harmed, not just by jihadists. August 15th, Washington Times, hundreds of priests preyed on youth. Grand jury finds more than 1,000 victims, Catholic Church cover-up, Laura Kelly. A landmark grand jury report says hundreds of priests preyed on boys and girls in six Pennsylvania dioceses, where at least 1,000 were sexually assaulted over decades, as top church officials, including Cardinal Donald W. Wuerl, Archbishop of Washington, and the Vatican, systematically worked to cover it up. At almost 900 pages, the exhaustive report details methods by leaders of the dioceses to insulate accused members of the church from outside prosecution and judgment, employing the same strategies uncovered by the Boston Globe's 2002 report on a systematic cover-up of sexual abuse within the Catholic Church. The investigating team received files on at least 100 other priests, but didn't include them in the report for lack of sufficient evidence. The actual number of child victims is believed to be in the thousands, the jurors wrote, but there is no information because they either didn't come forward or their diocese didn't create written records for all times they heard of the abuse. The six dioceses, Allentown, Erie, Greensburg, Harrisburg, Pittsburgh, and Scranton, served nearly 1.6 million Catholics in Pennsylvania. In 1993, Cardinal Wuerl, then Bishop of the Diocese of Pittsburgh, coined the term Circle of Secrecy to describe the methods in place to protect accused members of the church, according to the report. I have to interject, Elizabeth Cuppet Caverly. This is my home state. I'm so ashamed. And this Circle of Secrecy, why, it sounds like something out of Bohemian Grove, doesn't it? It doesn't sound like anything that should be in the midst of a Christian religion. Far, far from it. It seems like you could picture a satanic kind of altar and human sacrifice. And in a sense, these lives were sacrificed. They would never again be the same after such a betrayal. Never, never. So we'll go on. This included downplaying, and we're talking about this Circle of Secrecy. This included downplaying accusations of rape and molestation with euphemisms like horseplay and wrestling. Now, isn't that disgusting? There's a big difference between raping and horseplay. Oh, my. Okay, transferring accused priests around the country or placing them on, quote, health leave while keeping them on the church payroll, at times to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars. In some instances, accused sexual abusers were promoted. Other methods included covering costs of victims related to medical and psychological care and settlements to victims with the signing of a confidentiality agreement. Cardinal Wuerl on Tuesday defended his role in the church at the time, quote, "While I understand this report may be critical of some of my actions, I believe the report confirms that I acted with diligence, with concern for the victims, and to prevent future acts of abuse," end of quote, the archbishop said in a statement before the grand jury was released. "I sincerely hope that a just assessment of my actions, past and present, and my continuing commitment to the protection of children will dispel any notions otherwise made by this report," end of quote. And Fatherland Security laughs at his little sanctuary because it is not just a political kind of totalitarianism. No, it is the heart of depravity. It is the heart of the culture of death in America, and the judgment of God will be coming more and more. It began with the towers falling on 9/11, but this will not cease because the sleeping Christians don't care enough. Elizabeth Cuppet Caverly says, I certainly hope that some hearts and minds do care. On this article in the Washington Times, it shows some family members weeping. They're weeping because they've had to live with the results of these decimated lives, these ruined souls, that their relatives Their relatives were hurt by this. And to hear this cardinal sanctimoniously saying that he really took care of everybody well. Back to the report. The report's effect on the Pennsylvania diocese. Lou, I always have trouble with the plural. Tell me. Dioceses?
Diocese,
the plural. So it's really the same, singular and plural. I really didn't want to continue doing that in an illiterate way. The report's effect on the Pennsylvania diocese, as well as the Vatican, could be seismic and costly. The Archdiocese of Boston in 2002 paid $10 million to victims of a priest who had abused more than 130 children during his tenure, and in 2003 paid $85 million to victims and their parents who had filed lawsuits over the abuse. The scandal also resulted in the resignation of Cardinal Bernard Law. On Tuesday, Pennsylvania Attorney General Josh Shapiro detailed graphic stories of victims of sexual abuse that occurred over decades, some stretching back as far as the early 1950s and continuing into the late 2000s. Lou, you're now 70 years old, born in 1947. Just think about that. You were only a wee child, maybe 4 or 5 years old, when this began and it continued. How old were you in, let's say, 2011?
Well, let's say 61.
Probably 61. From the time you were about 4 years old till you were about 60 what?
64.
Imagine that this unmitigated horror went on and there weren't enough people, good people, who would tell the truth in the Roman Catholic Church. No wonder the families are upset, and I would predict a lot of them will leave to Protestantism if things aren't fixed, if they don't let the clergy marry, for example. We talked to a Roman Catholic friend just the other day, and we were talking about some of these things, and she said, my husband says it just doesn't make sense that the priest can't marry. And I said, no, but then they have to become twisted and go after boys or little girls, whatever they're going to do. All right, so at any rate, back to the article. The report took 2 years to compile based on victim testimony and a 500,000 internal documents subpoenaed from the church. 500,000? My word. Isn't that something? Now we're back. A quote. These documents from the diocese's own secret archives formed the backbone of this investigation, said Mr. Shapiro, adding that internal communications from the church corroborated victim testimonies and illustrated the extent of the cover-up which reached the Vatican. And we hear now today silence. Isn't that right, Lou? I believe they're being silent about this. They can't remain silent, I would predict. Back to the article. In each diocese, the bishops had the key to the secret archives, which contained both allegations and admissions of the abuse and cover-up, he said. Now, do we understand this was an organized cover-up of vast proportions if each bishop had the secret archive? This is the secret circle, all right, to keep this all quiet. The article says more than a dozen victims and family members of victims joined the Attorney General Tuesday for a press conference in Harrisburg, crying and leaning on one another for comfort as details of sexual assaults by priests on children were made public. This included a disturbing report of four predator priests in the Pittsburgh diocese who groomed and violently assaulted young boys. Mr. Shapiro said one boy was forced to stand naked on a bed in the rectory, posing as Christ on the cross, while these priests took photos of him. The pictures were added to a collection of child pornography and shared on church grounds. These same predators gifted their favored victims with gold crosses to wear as necklaces, marking which boys had been groomed for abuse, the report said. Predators in every diocese weaponized the Catholic faith and used it as a tool of their abuse, Mr. Shapiro said. The grand jury recommended that criminal and civil statutes of limitations on sexual abuse in Pennsylvania be reformed to prosecute the detailed allegations of sexual abuse stemming from decades past. They wrote that the systematic cover-up allowed for the statute of limitations to expire before victims and law enforcement could hold perpetrators accountable. However, at least two instances uncovered by the jury's investigation led to charges against Priest. Last month, Catholic priest John Sweeney of Greensburg pleaded guilty to sexually abusing a 10-year-old boy in the early 1990s. Sweeney served as a priest for 16 years and in various parishes, according to the Attorney General's office. In Erie, the Reverend David Poulson, or Polson, awaits trial on charges of sexually abusing two boys over many years. State prosecutors also say Polson's superior, Bishop Donald Troutman, knew about and covered up the abuse. Cardinal Wuerl, as Pittsburgh's bishop, had served the longest term as head of the diocese and personally dealt with at least 25 of the 99 accused priests. He assumed leadership in Pittsburgh in 1988 and a year later drafted a letter to the Vatican raising concerns about a number of high-profile sexual abuse allegations against priests and what role the church should play in assuming responsibility and dealing with the accused. He called for transparency among Catholic leaders, for them to tell one another that if a transferred priest had been accused of sexual assault, that they had a responsibility to their parishioners who would be gravely unsettled and scandalized that a priest pedophile has been assigned in their midst, the report cited the cardinal as writing. Despite this early attempt at a culture shift, Cardinal Wuerl presided over the reassignment of accused pedophiles to other churches and schools, positions where they were expected to interact with children. Can you see what's happening there? It says, at times he did discourage reassignments and encourage resignations, but he approved the church's stipends for the men and, in some cases, health insurance. He was promoted to cardinal in 2006 and took over leadership of the Archdiocese of Washington. If you don't think this program is important, we are being targeted right now overhead as I read this article. If you don't think there is an international network of pedophile abuse and horror, Alex Jones is right. The first time I ever heard him talk, June the 2nd of 2003, he was talking about this harm to children. God abhors it. It's an abomination to his sacred throne in heaven. He wants this ended. He wants the light shined strongly on this. He wants those laws changed in Pennsylvania. He doesn't want these men to get away with this horror. Well, back to the article. I think everyone recognizes that words, good intentions, and new policies, while important, are not enough. Cardinal Wuerl wrote in a post on the website of the Archdiocese of Washington, quote, "We must not only denounce abuse and take steps to stop the abusers, we must remove even the appearance of cover-ups as we investigate and address allegations." We really want to compliment the legal force, we'll call it, spiritual force there in Pennsylvania for bringing this grand jury to this conclusion. We really need more of this. These prosecutors like Attorney General Josh Shapiro, we really need this. Pray hard for America to repent, and we hope you'll write to us. Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. If you're in hard circumstances, please do not send us money now. We need letters of encouragement and prayer. We're okay now with the money for a while. So unless you have a lot of money and God tells you to tithe, that's fine. But if you need it right now, start preparing, because things are not going to be really good forever. Stan Johnson was going to talk on his radio program about the good times, and the Lord says, don't do it. Don't do it. But God will triumph. God bless you, and we'll be praying for you this week. Good night.